Alright everybody, we will be starting the next session, and just thanks again to all those sending the emails, and I do appreciate that. We will forward those to the relevant people. So we are aware of some of the technical problems that some of you are experiencing. We're just trying to isolate the problem, but welcome to all those who have just logged on as well. Just a note that the next session will be starting soon. We're just waiting for everybody to arrive.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're starting in about 60 seconds, please. Everyone, thank you for coming back. I'm going to have to be a bit stern this afternoon, so it's 21 minutes a report, and I've got a number of announcements at the end of the day. We're going to begin with Nigeria and then continue with South Africa, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Nigeria, Jean Obi. Thank you, Jean.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I hope you can hear me all right. Okay. This is a report from Nigeria on the National Braille Council of Nigeria, NABRACON, which is now registered as Braille Advancement Association of Nigeria, BRAAN. And this is the country report for 2008 to 2012. A major development during the period is the formal registration and change of name of the National Braille Council of Nigeria, NABRACON. During the process of initiating the country's Braille Authority in 1991, government was approached for financial and moral support. This was refused on the grounds that it would duplicate activities of the Nigerian National Advisory Council for the Blind, which was set up shortly after the country's independence. Efforts to convince government otherwise failed, but the initiators of NABRACON went ahead with the proposal nevertheless. Yet another hurdle was created later with new government regulations stipulating that only government bodies, departments and agencies could use the words such as council and authority in their registered names. We tried an unknown number of names to get them approved without any success over several years. Because of this development, the registration of the country's Braille Authority was delayed for quite a long time, and in fact it has just been concluded earlier this year with the formal approval of the Braille Advancement Association of Nigeria. At last they accepted a name that we provided, a name that they accepted. Hopefully, now that the country's Braille Authority has been registered, BRAN, as it is, shall be known, shall be able to apply for inclusion in some of the relevant government advisory committees and play a bigger part in Braille issues at all levels of government. Between 2008 and 2012, BRAN has been unable to hold regular annual general meetings and Braille advancement workshops as in previous years. Just one workshop and meeting was held in 2009 in celebration of the bicentennial of Louis Braille in Lagos. Activities included creating Braille awareness and celebrating Braille in general. Some of the major problems facing our association are: one, funding. With the present harsh economic climate of Nigeria, it is almost impossible to find sponsors for the authority's activities. The Braille Authority's meagre resources, which are mainly derived from proceeds from membership dues, cannot sustain its needs. Two, lukewarm attitude of employers. Employers of potential participants to BRAN workshops and activities, mainly government institutions, are for the most part not ready to pay for the expenses of their representatives. Meanwhile, most participants cannot afford to pay their travelling expenses, either due to high transportation costs or low salaries. Three, transport. Road transport is expensive and also very risky. Nigerian roads are in a very bad state. The dangers arising from the influx of criminal gangs and the heavy transport vehicles that ply our roads are imminent. The final major problem is communication. Communication is yet another problem. Only four of the current executive committee members at BRAN have an email address and access to an internet provider. The reliability of the internet providers in the country is far from expectations in most cases. Cell phone is the most preferred means of communication, but this cannot be utilised for any meaningful deliberations due to high tariffs. Five, general insecurity. During the last 2 years, the general level of security has also deteriorated, as many of you will have realised, making people more reluctant to travel, particularly to certain areas of the country. Altogether, the environment and situation is not conducive to holding our annual meetings, and as members of BRAN, we need to find other ways for our executive committee to be effective and for keeping in touch and assisting our Braille users and educators. At the 2009 meeting, print and Braille copies of the UEB Braille Primer were distributed. BRAN and the people it serves recognises the great gains from being a member of ICEB. Together with the advent of internet service in Nigeria, we now enjoy the dividends of our participation in ICEB-related activities better than ever before. BRAN now have interaction with other member countries of ICEB and access to a wealth of information. Having a Braille Authority has had a very healthy and positive impact on the state of Braille and its use in Nigeria over the past 20 years. even though our circumstances and environment do not presently allow us to have the type of infrastructure we see and envy in other member countries. Despite the many difficulties we face, we plan to hold a major national forum for Brown before the end of 2012 to celebrate the completion of our registration and to move forward with implementing UEB, particularly the mathematics code. We will need to source funding for making copies of the UEB publications available, the Braille primer, the technical guidelines and the rules of UEB, but we have high hopes of moving forward with this. We hope that by the time Brown celebrates its 25 years of existence in 2016, our Braille users and educators must have taken giant steps in exploring and achieving the gains of other developed membership countries for the good of its visually challenged persons. We vehemently hope to progress considerably in this direction. Implementation of UEB. Members voted unanimously to accept the use of UEB in Nigeria at its annual general meeting of then NABRACON in 2005. It was not, however, until after the 2008 General Assembly that Nigeria started to produce information and the new code using the booklet UEB, New Symbols and New Usage, produced by Canada for workshops. That has been very effective because it covers the changes to everyday Braille, which is adequate for many of our Braille users. In 2009, two of the major Braille book producers in Nigeria, AMWAB and NigerWise, started to produce their books in UEB Braille. Initially, the New Symbols and New Usage leaflet was either sent out with the books or bound with the volume of the book. This was a way of familiarising users with UEB nationwide and an alternative to workshops. 100 copies of the Australian Braille Primer were given out in Braille and in print at the 2009 NABRACON meeting. They reached all the states of the country. We are now looking at publicising the technical guidelines, and we are exploring and extracting technical codes because the technical guidelines is too much for users at the lower levels, particularly for the teachers whose standard of education on overall is not very high. Outreach, Nigeria to Ghana. And our annual general meeting in 2005 was preceded by a workshop on UEB. We invited three neighbouring countries in the West African region, Ghana, Liberia and Sierra Leone, to join us for the workshop and meeting. Only Ghana, however, was able to come. We have since then continued to talk with them about setting up a Braille authority of their own. Our invitation to our Ghanaian brothers yielded good fruits with the news at the IDP Forum in Ghana in July 2011, where our president was present. Ghana announced that it had decided to set up a Braille authority and to apply for membership of ICEB. I fully expected them to attend this meeting, but unfortunately they have not managed it. Brown, in order for the Ghanaian dream to be realised, presented them with print and Braille copies of the UEB primer and the technical guidelines. Nigeria will indeed be glad to have a neighbouring Braille authority with which to interact in its region. Outreach, Canada to Nigeria. This is the reverse way. For several years now, CNIB volunteers have been transcribing some books for the NigerWise Braille Book Production Centre in Lagos. These files are shared with Anglo-Nigerian Welfare Association for the Blind, AMWAB, who produces books also in Lagos. The two centres have a policy of sharing files with each other using the same software and format. We are greatly indebted to CNIB that we know through ICEB for this help with textbooks. Outreach US to Nigeria. Braille Institute Press. Since 2002, the Braille Institute Press in the US has been sending consignments of their surplus general reading books to the NigerWise Centre for distribution to schools that enrol blind students all over Nigeria. The schools are asked to set up reading corners, and once a school is established on the list, additional consignments are sent to them as available. There are beautiful books covering different ages and even including Harry Potter books and the like. in some of the special schools, volunteers go in regularly to read with the students. These books have had a great impact on the reading efficiency of the students and encourage reading culture in the children. The ANWAB and NIDWIVE centres are fully engaged with meeting the demand for textbooks and do not produce general reading books, so the Braille Institute books fill a wide open need. We desperately want to find somebody who is near from America, who is near Braille Institute Press, to whom we can send a personal message back. So if there's anybody here who has connections with Braille Institute Press, we'd like to know you, please. ANWAB wishes to acknowledge some large consignments of books from the Library of Congress. Some of the books were placed in its library, whilst others were distributed to various schools. The books are greatly appreciated. Outreach UK to Nigeria. ANWAB also wishes to acknowledge book consignments received from RNIB. Some were likewise placed in the ANWAB library, whilst others were distributed to schools. Books are always greatly appreciated. Thank you. Repairs for Perkins Brailler. Preliminary talks are ongoing between ANWAB and Perkins School and some Nigerian multinational companies with the setting up of Braille machine repair facilities in different parts of the country. They're just at the beginning of the project, discussing the projects, but we look forward to such facilities becoming a reality. We really appreciate the efforts of Josie Howe with her work on isolating the codes in mathematics for different class levels. We were trying to do it, and we learned that Josie has some. So we have asked her to, we asked her to bring them so we could see what she was doing. And we are looking forward eagerly to meeting with her and being able to ask and do it. Brian, say a very big thank you to the CNIB transcribers who have given us tremendous support in brailing the books of our blind students and are continuing to do so. Braille users and educators are greatly indebted to Braille Institute Press of US for meeting the reading needs of all categories of Braille users in our country through their frequent consignments. In conclusion, Brian would ask ICEB as a body and the individual country members to continue to encourage developing countries to set up Braille authorities and seek association with ICEB. The benefits it can bring to end users in such countries are immeasurable, and this is definitely in line with what we have discussed earlier, particularly what Peter and Mike were talking about making Braille more available to people who need it. We know as recipients of things assistance through ICEB what a difference it can make to the provision of Braille and access to Braille in Nigeria. And we pray that other countries will also be activated into setting up a Braille authority and having a relationship with ICEB. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jean, for your report. We've got about 6 minutes for questions. 7 minutes. So do we have any questions for Jean? No? All right. I think it's quite humbling listening to reports from people like Jean. For those of us who are in developed countries. So thank you very much, Jean, for what you can teach. We have a UK person, Pete, wanting to make some comment. Pete?
Thank you very much. It's a comment. I think there's potentially quite a lot of development funding that's being deployed through various organisations, and one of my concerns is that this may not always be as well coordinated as perhaps it might be. I think it will be helpful for ICEB to play some role in achieving some of that coordination in the future, particularly in terms of and the provision of materials. So I think it will be helpful if in the text of one of our resolutions we have something around what I believe to be a role for us, which is to help to coordinate developing country spend, if I put it like that, actually means we get best value for money.
Fine. Any further comments or questions relating to Nigeria? All right. Thank you very much, Jean. Let's move on to South Africa and Christo.
Thank you, Mary. I will do part of it, and my colleague Robert Magube will do part of this. As you will notice from the report, the 4 years since the previous AGM have been very busy as far as Braille is concerned. Many important developments took place. I'm not going to read the whole report. I'm going to highlight a few things and focus on what happened after the report and on what did not make its way into the report. Now, first, the Unified Braille Code. In South Africa, we talk about the Unified Braille Code, or UBC, because not only English is unified in South Africa, we managed to unify all 11 of our official languages. It was a major undertaking, but we had some brilliant people doing it. That means that all our languages, the grade one of all our languages, is identical. The only difference in grade two among all our 11 languages are the contractions. In other words, punctuation, numbers, mathematical signs, they are all the same. They are unified. So, yes, you will see in our documentation, we say they are printed in unified English Braille, which is correct, but when we talk about UBC, we talk of all our unified codes. Immediately after the previous General Assembly in Melbourne, our Braille Authority decided to implement the non-technical component of UBC in all levels at schools and to phase in the technical component from the lower grades. Up to grade 9, the new code, new technical code, is used. In the higher grades, the old code is still used, being phased out. I will say more in a while about the dire need that exists now have teachers trained in the technical component higher grade. If we look at the Louis Braille bicentenary year, you may recall in Melbourne I listed a whole long list of things we intended to do during the Louis Braille bicentenary year. I'm happy to report that we managed to do just about all of them. I think the only one that I mentioned there that did not happen was the street in Grahamstown, which was supposed to be renamed to Louis Braille Street, but that did happen in another town. I think it was in Pietermaritzburg, where the street had been renamed to Louis Braille Street. It would probably have been easier to do that right now, because now we are right in the mood for changing names in South Africa. One of the highlights of the Louis Braille bicentenary was an essay writing competition where candidates had to write, or entrants had to write, a short essay on the importance of Braille in their lives. And the head of the Essay Library for the Blind, Francois Hendricks, came up with the very sharp title for it, My Brailliant Life, which he very resourcefully also managed to translate with equal effectiveness into Afrikaans and into isiXhosa. A booklet was published with the best essays in them. The book is simultaneously in Braille and in large print. The prize giving was quite an auspicious occasion in Cape Town. We had the Minister of Arts and Culture herself present there to at the prize giving. And Darlene, you can be glad it's not she who's going to talk tomorrow, because I think you would have found Pingwana more difficult to say than Pasha.
Thank you.
Then a lot of energy went into the restructure of our Braille Authority. You heard a bit about that already. For about 18 months, we have been discussing it and developing discussion papers. And in September, the discussion paper became a draft constitution. I think it was about the 5th then. And eventually, the 13th draft, lucky 13, was unanimously accepted as the constitution on Friday. We had a bit of a giggle about it last night, that Braille SA became the South African Braille Authority, but the Braille Authority of Canada is becoming Braille Canada. Well, my message to you, Canada, is been there, done that. Braille and the Department of Basic Education, we went through an acrimonious time with the Department of Education. We had a battle to get their involvement. Eventually, it was not they who led the implementation of the UEB or UBC, as happened in Australia. We had to coerce them, or we even had to go the route of taking them to the Human Rights Commission, but we settled out of court, so to say, and they came to the party, and things have improved. A very positive development happened just over a year ago, when the department arranged a 3-day capacity building session, a training session for school management teams, and a lot of time was devoted to Braille. The department then also pledged its commitment to having all teachers of visually impaired learners know Braille by 2014. Now, since then, things have progressed again with the speed of sluggish mud, and I think there needs to be some more coercion. Especially now that there is, as I mentioned earlier, the dire need for training in the technical component of the UBC. Now, through the Training and Implementation Material Committee, Jean's committee, it was very valuable to us, because our rep on that committee learned of the maths training material that Josie House had put together. And they got communicating, and Josie promised she would bring it along for us. And she has done it, and our rep has it. And we have an undertaking now from an official of the Department of Basic Education that the training can go ahead during the second half of July. And one of the observers here, Dina Moodley, is going to present the training. Did you know that, Dina? Training material. We've developed a certain amount of training material. Antoinette has developed an excellent training course. We all use it, and she's also done that on CD-ROM. I can really highly recommend it. It uses the Barna samplers, which have been updated somewhat. But it is very good. And then, of course, hands-on, which is a training manual for adult beginners or older beginners. developed by Renette Poppelstein. That has just been published. And there are some other works in the pipeline as well. Another important thing was the reworking of the Tshivenda Braille system. My colleague and friend over here, Obert Maguve, and at least two of the observers who are here, Nechutuni and Johannes Dube, were involved with that. They did an absolutely professional job with it. And they had the added complication that at the same time they redeveloped the Braille system for the Tshivenda system, the orthography was also changed. Then there's a Braille investigation currently in progress in South Africa, an investigation into Braille production to make Braille more readily available at the quickest possible time, in the quickest possible time at the lowest possible rate. It is sponsored by the Department of Basic Education, and now we have a commercial break. The Department of Arts and Culture, the Department of Arts and Culture has been supporting reliably and to a very large extent Braille in all its forms since 1995. And they are sponsoring this investigation, which is done by, and here I must just make a correction in the report, a consortium by the name of Lindandanda. I think I left out the one and. Lindandanda. And a few days, weeks ago, we had a meeting to evaluate one of the a report which is close to the final report. And what does appear from the report is that there is a tremendous, tremendous need for Braille, a need that is much higher than the capacity to provide. And there are many suggestions, recommendations in the report on how to progress and to try and fulfill in the need that there is for Braille. Then I'm now going to turn to Obert to tell you about the mass literacy campaign called Kari Gude, which he is running. At the time of writing the report, I did not have that information to do justice to the report. And I think after his presentation at Braille SA, many of us have a much better idea now of the nature and scope of that huge, huge project. And I know that there is a big interest in this particular campaign. You can move the microphone across to Obert and please tell us about the mass literacy campaign.
Thank you, Christo. Thank you, Madam President, for the opportunity. Kari Gude, it's a literacy run by the Department of Education. Many initiatives were embarked upon prior to this one. For example, the South African National Literacy Initiative, Masifundisane, others by non-governmental organizations such as Project Literacy and so on and so forth. And they didn't make a huge impact in terms of the eradication of illiteracy here in our country. And I think the minister saw it fit to change the word, the name of the campaign, to give it a Tshivenda name, hoping that maybe it will bring the so much needed change and progress. Not because I speak Tshivenda, but that many initiatives are being given Chivenda words and names. We have got the Sumbandila, our satellite, which is the pathfinder. We have got Funza Lushaka, Teach the Nation, and so on and so forth. It is estimated that we have over 9 million individuals who are illiterate in South Africa. And like I said, that previous initiatives were not successful in eradicating illiteracy. A task team was appointed to investigate the reasons why this problem couldn't be solved, and also to study literacy models in other countries. We studied, for example, the Yosipuedo campaign, which is Yes I Can, the Cuban campaign, the alphabetization campaign in Brazil, the other one, I can't remember its name, in New Zealand, and other countries. So a plan was crafted to deal with this problem, and it was recommended that the South African National Literacy Initiative couldn't work because it was in the Department of Education. It wasn't autonomous. So you know what happens when something is within the department. There are so many bureaucracies and other challenges that you have to battle with from time to time. Then it was recommended that even when this is within the Department of Education, it must be a separate unit. And I'm happy to inform you that it is indeed a separate unit, and its budget is more than the budget of the National Department of Education itself. Material was developed in 11 official languages. The material is similar in all respects except the languages themselves. The material addresses seven themes, amongst others, in the environment, the health, our country and the continent, employment, and so on and so forth. The activities are quite clear, and they've got detailed steps as to what needs to be done, when and how. For example, adult learners are expected to have discussions. They are expected to explain, to copy, to match, to write, to identify, and so on and so forth. Braille is also a key component of this campaign. Material is provided as well in all languages. There are 20 assessments that are being administered. 10 address the language issue, and 10 the numeracy issue. Each year, when the program has been completed, the South African Qualifications Authority verifies the marking. And that happened a month ago. The learner assessment portfolios are kept in the warehouse for a period of 5 years for researchers and for those who just want to satisfy themselves that really the campaign is taking place. So anyone who wants to see whether this is happening could contact me. I will give him or her the place where the material is kept for the purposes alluded to previously. We, of course, do have challenges, but the challenges are not necessarily in relation to teaching and learning itself. They are pretty much administrative in nature, whereby people would complain about stipends and so on. But we hope to improve the situation. The last thing that I wanted to mention is that we make use of volunteer educators, all those who have passed grade 12, who are unemployed, could volunteer their services, and we give them stipends. We don't give them a long term kind of a contract. It's just a short term contract, and we don't regard this to be employment. Hence, we say they volunteer their services and give them a stipend. We train our volunteer educators on how to deliver the mass literacy campaign program. We train them on principles of adult learning because they are dealing with adults. We train them on the rules and responsibilities of being a volunteer. And we also cater for all disability groups. In short, that is what the campaign is all about. Or maybe let me just give you the figures. When we started in 2008, we were able to register 300,000 adult learners. 2009, we registered 609,000 learners. 2010, it was 620. Last year, it was 648. And this year, we are aiming to reach 678,000. We are, of course, helped by our volunteer educators, and this year I think there will be 40,000 of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, we have about 2 minutes for questions for Christo and Dr. Maguve. So, do we have any questions for? On the South African report, we do from Nigeria.
Thank you. Given the fact that this is Africa, and so many other African countries are having problems, I want to find out how South Africa has been able to succeed this far in not only getting helpers or volunteers, but even getting these blind people themselves to be interested in Braille. Thank you.
I'm not sure whether the question is addressed to me or to Christo. In South Africa, what we do is that, for instance, through this campaign, we run awareness raising campaigns. We go to community radio stations, the print media, and so on. To get people at least to know about the campaign itself. And you know that the word of mouth spreads faster than anything. So, you know, blind people, I'm not sure whether it's a misconception or not. We happen to know each other. So that's how we we get the message through about whatever initiative we are to embark.
All right, Christo?
I can just add, I think the countries themselves, South Africa, Nigeria, are so different in these respects. You know, in South Africa, we have a constitution, and the Chapter 9 bodies in the constitution, which give people rights that they can enforce, and I suspect you don't have something similar in Nigeria. And blind people have been making use of these things.
Thank you, Christo. We have an observer from Zimbabwe.
Yes, Andrew from Zimbabwe. My question is directed to the member nations who have already given their reports in connection with the Unified Braille Code. I've heard that some of the nations are already implementing the EUB in their countries. Considering the fact that the majority of our users are school children and students, if you also considered, the timing, when these students and pupils grasp this, and vis-a-vis their examinations, take for example in our country, some of the students write across examinations. If these codes are changed, before the students have grasped some of these codes, what is your view on that one? Programming and
briefly two things. One is for new learners. For new learners, we believe that the unified code is a lot easier to learn than the old Braille. As for the transition in the lower grades at school, there's really not much difference from what they have known. It's in the higher grades when the technical codes become more prominent where the differences become bigger.
Thank you, Christo. Unfortunately, I think we're going to need to move on, but the transition questions, Zimbabwe, you might want to ask Australia and New Zealand specifically this week about the transition program that they have for different years of the students in Australia and New Zealand, and you'll get some further information about that. Thank you very much, Christo and Robert. Now, if we go on to the United States, Pete is presenting that report.
Mandy White will be presenting the report on our behalf.
Thank you, Peter. Report from the United Kingdom. UKAF was formed in 2009 following the merger of the UK Association of Braille Producers, the Braille... Something's not working, is it? No, okay. UKAF was formed in 2009 following the merger of the UK Association of Braille Producers, Braille Authority of the United Kingdom, and the Transcribers. Its vision is to create a world in which blind and partially sighted people receive quality, accessible formats which meet their reading needs. UKAF will realise its vision by setting standards for accessible formats through development, delivery, and promotion of codes, standards, and best practice for the production and provision of accessible formats, consultation and collaboration with transcribers, service providers, and users of accessible formats. UKAF delivers choice of complementary and diverse accessible formats, quality by working nationally and internationally on codes and standards for accessible formats, and community by placing people with print disabilities at the heart of our work and respecting all cultures and values. experience by involving all members in our work and sharing user-centered knowledge, and independence by facilitating effective communication to individual print-disabled people. Following an initial period of operation with an interim board, the association has successfully elected successive boards at its AGMs and continues to go for that UCAF assumes responsibility for the development of standards and guidelines for a range of formats. The board had established a number of subject areas in order to manage its work. The Braille subject area is chaired by me, Mandy White. I'm a Braille project officer at RNIB, and the Braille subject area group is perhaps the most active group within UCAF. Well, it is the most active group within UCAF. The Braille subject area has created three groups focused around Braille teaching, production and technology, and code development. The decisions are recommended to the Braille subject group, which prepares reports for the UCAF board. The decision to adopt UEB was progressed in this manner, and Pete would like to take this opportunity to pay tribute to the members of the Braille subject group as a whole, who worked tirelessly to prepare detailed information for consideration by the board. As will be the case for most organisations, resources are extremely scarce, and we could not operate without the in-kind support from more than 50 members of UCAF. Organisations such as RNIB may be the largest developers and producers of Braille in the UK, but it is the collective energy of many organisations and individuals which delivers success. It may seem impossible to highlight anyone for particular mention, but this report would not be complete without recognition of Bill Poole, who for many years has played a pivotal role in the development of Braille in the UK. We have long valued his integrity and professionalism, and we wish to place on record our thanks to him for his diligence and dedication. Celebrating the bicentenary of the birth of Louis Braille. The bicentenary celebrations proved to be a catalyst for the development and promotion of Braille in the UK. A report of activities was made available to UCAF members, and they are too varied and numerous to cover here in detail. However, I will shamelessly mention a few personal highlights. Members of UCAF worked together to arrange a church service in London, which was attended by more than 400 people. The celebrations were led by a choir of blind musicians using Braille music, and the two organists were also Braille music readers. The BBC covered the event, although they did not record the whole service, something they very much regretted in a letter to me, to Pete. The quality of the and this is a quote from them, the quality of the musicianship we observed was second to none, and we very much regret not broadcasting the event in full. The emotion throughout the service was palpable, and you are to be congratulated for marking such an event in such a momentous manner. Braille was prevalent in the UK media throughout the year, and the interest in its development was apparent through the increasing traffic on RNIB and other websites. The Braille-related pages on the RNIB site remain in the top 10 most visited pages, a considerable feat given the breadth and range of material covered through the site. From Braille puzzles to innovative books and magazines, every opportunity was taken to celebrate the various uses of Braille. An event in London Science Museum, a fitting setting for a globally enduring innovation, provided an opportunity to publicly mark this milestone in reading through touch. But it is the difference to lives which Braille makes which should continue to be most prevalent in our minds. And in the written report, there are a number of quotes here which we used in publications and flyers and posters and on our website, such as, Braille allow me to cherish the beautiful words of well-wishers on a wedding day. Because of Braille, I can wish my Welsh friends a bore da and an oswyth da. I only live 10 miles away from Wales. Braille helps me spend my £100 million on the best squad in fantasy football. And my own personal favourite, which was demonstrating that Braille can enable people to complete crossword puzzles. And that one is, Braille showed me how to strip without undressing. And if you can't work out that one, ask me and I'll tell you later. The adoption of codes. UCAF adopted the Braille International Phonetics Alphabet in 2010 and has been preparing materials to support its implementation. Although very few textbooks and other materials are transcribed using this code, we are pleased that its revision enables improved support for linguists. The adoption of UEB by the UK in October 2011 and the wealth of material leading to that decision are matters which have been well reported to the ICEB. The initial consultation carried out by the Braille Authority of the UK, in which materials were sent to around 4,000 people, elicited 470 responses, with a majority of respondents against any change. However, it was unclear what those who did not respond thought of the issue, and thus UCAF set about carrying out further evaluation, including sending samples to readers, and all of the readers were contacted, carrying out a survey of the process of adoption and implementation in other countries, assessing suitability of technical codes, and consulting with a variety of stakeholders. Discussion at the UCAF board was robust, with all members carefully considering the impact of proposed changes. And it was decided that the adoption of UEB should be followed by careful consideration of a suitable timetable for implementation in the UK. As will be apparent to many countries in the ICEB, implementation of such a momentous decision is a challenging process. UCAF has prepared a draft plan, which was presented to the board in March. Although the plan does not yet contain proposed dates by which implementation might be completed, we will continue to require extensive support and advice from other countries as we progress through the various stages of implementation. We hope to be able to gather further information around topics such as the transformation of production workflows to include UEB production, development of teaching resources, and transition planning. We appreciate the support we have already been given and look forward to continued cooperation. Other developments. And we have been fortunate to have two. Although the competition does not generate a vast number of entries, the two winners have contributed hugely to the publicity of the importance of Braille in the UK. The winning entries are in the at the end of the written report. RNIB has revised many of its web pages related to Braille, and it is now much easier to find relevant information and products. Please visit www.rnib.org.uk/Braille. We welcome any comments and observations. RNIB and other leading organisations providing Braille services in the UK continue to gather information about the ways in which Braille is used. It is a matter of some concern that an average decline of 7% per annum in the use of Braille library services is being recorded, and that, if current trends continue, a national service may not be viable in time. By way of illustration, you stood at 2,252 in 2008, that is now approximately 1,792, that was at the end of 2011. If this trend is projected to the end of 2015, it will stand at 1179, or close to 50%. Oh, sorry, 1179. Yes, that was this one. Or close to 50% of its December using Braille continues to rapidly change, and services which may have been traditionally valued may not have such prominence in the future. Access to e-books continues to expand in the UK. A recent joint recommendation sponsored by the UK Right to Read Alliance and the Publishers Association supports the option of enabling text-to-speech in e-books, with the result that many can now be read in this manner. Successive London Book Fair events continue to highlight the inaccessibility of many books, and we are achieving good results. However, those of us who need and want to read by touch are being increasingly left behind, and it is for this reason that RNIB is leading the development of a low-cost, refreshable Braille display. And Pete will be commenting further on that elsewhere in the agenda. We are extremely disappointed that the UK government chose to remove the only direct support it provides to enable the development and promotion of Braille, which was a grant of £200,000. And it has been provided to RNIB for many years, and this support has been invaluable. It has been withdrawn just at the point of adoption of UEB, and such a decision will have an inevitably adverse impact on implementation planning. The UK led successful calls for EU legislation for Braille to be placed on pharmaceutical packaging. We worked to agree a standard which has been adopted by many countries and which is now being considered by the International Standards Organization. It can often be the case that such policy and standards developments efforts yield little positive result for consumers, but this is not one of those cases. The majority of pharmaceutical products available in the UK now contain information in Braille, and there is increasing access to support information, such as the list of side effects, etc. Work is continuing to embed this standard into a range of standards approach, although the effort to achieve this should not be underestimated. There are also discussions around expanding these labelling conventions to a wider range of products and services, and an ISO meeting will consider this in May during its meeting in Japan. We have been working with colleagues in Ireland for around 2 years with a view to enabling them to create a Braille Authority. We're pleased to report that the Braille Authority of Ireland is now formed and will hold its inaugural meeting on the 3rd of May 2012. UKAF will continue to support the development of this authority, and we will place particular emphasis on the adoption of UEB and encouraging the authority to join the ICEB. A great deal of Braille now available in the UK is produced through increasingly automated transcription services. Commercially oriented producers compete with charities and other organisations for contracts to provide access to information where price rather than quality might be the determining factor in awarding a contract. UKAF will need to play a more active role in determining acceptable levels of quality and may need to strengthen its ability as an arbiter in cases where Braille readers receive items which are in some instances not fit for purpose. And I just want to complete the UK report with just a little extract from an essay written by Alexia Sloan, our 10-year-old winner of the Onkyo competition. Braille helps me with everyday life, like reading, writing and the like. Each tiny dot is a magic pupil. It helps me see a different way. So this is what I say, it's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mandy. Do we have any questions for the United Kingdom? No, we appear to have no questions. Well, no. Bill Jolly has a question for the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Chair. It's more a comment than a question, and it's essentially that I'd like to publicly congratulate the United Kingdom for having adopted Unified English Braille, and understand that every country is different and every country has its unique challenges in the implementation of Unified English Braille, and I'm sure that the United Kingdom will come up with a good proposal, and that in years to come that the Braille readers of the UK won't look back and will appreciate that a great deal of hard work has been done. I also think that the adoption of UEB by the United Kingdom is particularly important because it will help many other countries and particularly developing countries that have tended to follow the United Kingdom to feel confident about adopting Unified English Braille. So, as well as important for Braille readers in the UK, I think it's a very symbolic and important decision that will have global ramifications. So, well done to all of you for your very hard work during the last couple of years, and it's a great result, great achievement.
Call for questions for the United Kingdom. Okay. All right. We'll move on to the United States, and Frances Mary D'Andrea is taking us through the report.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am also going to be departing a little bit from the written report to provide a few updates since this report was written, including at the very beginning a change to membership in the Braille Authority of North America, BANA. At our last BANA board meeting, which was last weekend, we did add another BANA organization, the Alternative Text Production Center, ATPC, which is based in California. So that brings the total BANA membership to 15 member organizations and 3 associate members. BANA has been exceedingly busy with new publications. The Guidelines and Standards for Tactile Graphics 2010 document is now available on the BANA website, BrailleAuthority.org, as an online HTML file and a searchable PDF that can be downloaded. This simple statement belies the hundreds of hours that members of the BANA Publications Committee have spent preparing this document in these accessible electronic formats. Plans for the hard copy print and Braille versions, as well as a supplemental volume of tactile graphic examples, are also underway. As reported in our last country report, and that Pete Osborne and Jen Goulden have mentioned already today, this monumental document was accomplished by joint committees of the Canadian Braille Authority and BANA, and was reviewed by approximately 100 people around the world. We had reviewers from the United Kingdom and New Zealand and Canada and everywhere. We're very grateful to the many people who participated in creating, reviewing, revising, and now creating an online version of this resource. The BANA Tactile Graphics Committee continues to respond to direct queries about the new guidelines via an online Contact Us link. In addition, the updated Braille Formats Guidelines for Print-to-Braille Transcription document has been completed, and I'm pleased to report that we actually beat our deadline. Your report says that we hope to have it placed on the BANA website by the end of June, but as of April 22nd, last week, the document is now on the BANA website in 3 electronic formats: this enhanced accessible PDF, HTML, and as BRF as well. And arrangements are also made for its publication in print and Braille. So close on the heels of the formats revision is an UpBraille transcription. This document is not quite as far along in the production process. Other projects and documents nearing completion are guidelines for knit and crochet patterns and guidelines for producing standardized tests. As a result of this burst of productivity, BANA is reviewing and updating its publication policies. Publication has changed a great deal in the past decade since the last major BANA publication was released, and users now expect documents to be available electronically as well as in hard copy. So BANA's publication committee is leading our efforts regarding the most efficient and accessible ways to produce new BANA guidelines and documents and to get them out as quickly as possible. And this process includes many steps, starting with the development of the draft document by our technical committees, and then the review process, revision, copy editing, creation of online versions that are accessible and downloadable, as well as preparation for paper copies that can be purchased in Braille and print. So the Publications Committee is drafting authoring guidelines and technical specifications for the structure of BANA documents that can be shared with our technical committees and our board liaisons to assist them with their work. Starting in 2009, BANA's research committee, responding to requests from 3 BANA member organizations, conducted research to evaluate the Nemeth Uniform Braille System, known as NUBS. The committee employed several research strategies, including timed reading tests, focus groups, and a questionnaire based on a sampler of various texts that were written in NUBS. And the results of the NUBS evaluation can be found on the BANA website. The research committee was also busy developing and leading the review process for all of these new documents, these new guidelines and rules that have been submitted by technical committees. The Education and Outreach Committee of BANA has been charged with gathering information and data about the need for major Braille code changes, communicating with constituents, and obtaining feedback about the future direction of Braille codes. So to that end, the committee has led BANA's efforts to present at numerous conferences and conventions in the United States and Canada over the past few years, and to organize open forum events in conjunction with our board meetings where constituents can come and meet BANA board members in person and hear about new projects and provide feedback to us. We've also started a Facebook page and a Twitter feed, and we now have an interactive blog as well on the BANA website. One of the most successful activities this committee led was the development of a three-part article called The Evolution of Braille, Can the Past Help Plan the Future? The full article is also available at the BANA website as a PDF and as a BRF. And we also have paper copies available, too, as well, that we've been disseminating. The first section of the article outlined how text itself has changed over time and why Braille had to change as well. The second part described how BANA develops codes and how our technical committees work. And the final section was devoted to describing the decisions that BANA must make regarding code changes. The article has been disseminated widely, both by BANA and all our member organizations, and has generated a great deal of positive comment. BANA continues to explore options for code change in the United States. We are particularly interested in gathering data from countries that have implemented UEB to learn about their transition to the new code. That's come up several times today. The processes used for training teachers and transcribers, introduction of code changes to experienced Braille readers, how code changes were introduced in schools, comments from technical Braille users about UEB, and also what was mentioned earlier about costs involved. The BANA Refreshable Braille Technical Committee is developing a process for communicating with producers of software that generates contracted electronic Braille with the purpose of providing feedback to producers about translation errors. So the committee is drafting a test document that includes symbols and rules that are often translated incorrectly, and users of electronic Braille devices would then be able to use that document to see if the symbols are correctly represented on their display. And we're developing a web-based reporting form that can be used then to communicate those problems with producers. The process is now being shared with the producers of refreshable Braille products for their input, and this will, we hope, soon be on the BANA website as well. BANA has entered into an agreement with the American Printing House for the Blind, APH, in Louisville, Kentucky, to create and house BANA archives. APH is well known for its museum, and if you're ever in Louisville, Kentucky, I recommend you go and visit that wonderful museum. And they APH also houses the M.C. McGill Library as well as the Orientation Mobility Archive, and we have sent at least 15 large boxes of BANA materials that have been cataloged by Ann Rich, who's their collections manager. Many pre-BANA documents are also preserved in the archive, and minutes, agendas, committee reports, code drafts, treasurer's reports, letters, and other communications. I also serve as chair of the Archives Committee. I'm the unofficial, I think, BANA historian, and it's been great fun looking back through all those documents. The committee's still deciding the best way to capture and preserve the enormous amount of electronic communication that has been generated by BANA, especially in recent years. BANA instituted the Braille Excellence Award in the past few years to recognize outstanding contributions to Braille. And that award will be given every 2 years. The recipient of the first award was Dr. Abraham Nemeth, and his award was presented at the California Transcribers and Educators of the Blind and Visually Impaired Conference in March of 2009. And the recipient of the second award was Joe Sullivan, who accepted this award at the Getting in Touch with Literacy Conference in December of 2011. And that concludes my remarks on our United States report.
Thank you very much, Frances Mary. Now, do we have any questions for the United States? Okay, we have a question from Nigeria. Oh, sorry, we're going up the back. UK first, sorry.
Oh, you want to make her first?
Yes, please. Okay.
Bill Poole, UK. I thought that was an excellent and concise report. That's what I want to say first. I ought to know the answer to this question, but I'm afraid I don't. To what extent has the work done on tactile graphics, which we've been hearing about from Canada and the United States, and which has also been going on under the direction of our Sarah Morley Wilkins in the UK, to what extent has this come up with the same findings as to the best way of representing tactile graphics, or are there significant differences between the outcomes?
Yes, the tactile graphics guidelines that were finally adopted, I believe, built on some research that was done in Canada. And it was the GRASP project, and I'm trying to remember what GRASP stands for. I can make something up, but but I imagine we need an R. Oh, okay. And I do believe the GRASP guidelines are online at the CBA site. Is that correct? But it was research that was done in Canada. I'm looking at the Canadian delegation to see if they have... yeah,
I hope they are.
Yes.
If they're not, we'll put them there. I'll look when I get home.
Okay, thank you very much. So it was a research-based document from its beginning, but we did get an enormous amount. And thank you for mentioning Sarah Morley Wilkins, because we got a lot of wonderful feedback and information from the folks in the UK and Canada, and actually all over. So,
yeah, this is Sarah from Nigeria. I wonder if, as part of the U.S. outreach program, there is any provision for funding, not necessarily through cash, to help African countries develop Braille and encourage users to adopt Braille as their reading method. Because I begin to realize that with the development of technology, many blind people don't think it's necessary to use Braille any longer. And it's really affecting them, especially in the area of spelling and stuff. You know, when you have to listen, you may not know how to spell when you have to write. I've discussed with many other representatives from African countries since yesterday. And I discovered that almost everyone is having problems with this aspect, this funding thing. Everyone is willing to do it, everyone is willing to go out, but they still say funding is a problem. Please, not only the US, but what can any other country do to help us in Africa? Thank you.
This is Frances Mary again, just from the United States. I know of individual efforts. Jean had mentioned earlier about the Braille Institute, for example, which is in California in the United States, and they are also a member of BANA. Of course, Hilton Perkins has international programs. There are a number of individual efforts I know of, for sure, certainly, that provide Braille books to children in developing countries. Please, Judy.
It's Judy Dixon from the United States. I work for the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And as Jean mentioned in her report, we've sent a lot of books to countries. We have a lot more books to send. So we would welcome addresses of organizations who would like to receive additional books. And unfortunately, we're not able to divide them up and send only, and these would be mostly recreational reading, but there's, you'd get a little bit of everything. But we do, if anybody's interested, please get me addresses. Thanks.
Yes, we're going to Australia now, and Bill.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks, Frances, Mary, for a very interesting report. I'd like to make a question and a comment. My question firstly is, you mentioned about the evaluation of nubs, and I'm interested to know what the major conclusions of that investigation were, and I'm not sure whether you said that the report was available on the website, because I wasn't able to find it, so you could perhaps tell me that outside the meeting. My comment is, I don't want to say much about this now, but when we talk about tactile graphics, I just want to alert the meeting about the new technology of 3D printing that is starting to emerge. And it's currently it's quite expensive, but it's a technique of printing layer by layer using carefully chosen chemicals for making precision parts and perhaps medications. Other 3D objects, even shoes, clothing, that have to be very carefully, very a trivial application for Braille, but I think it has very interesting applications for making very good tactile graphics for blind people. And it's an area that I think is fertile for research by some of our colleagues in universities. And so I just want to raise the awareness of people about that new technology and to think about it in the context of tactile graphics for blind people.
Okay, as far as your question about the nubs, the evaluation results should be in the link that says research, and right, and Judy is looking for, I'm sorry, what? Yes, there's an executive summary of the research that was conducted, including the timed reading passages and the questionnaire for the sampler. And I'm looking at Diane because she is chair of the research committee. Let me hand that over to you, Diane.
Bill, a quick answer to your question is the bottom line was that there was no advantage to nubs that was found over current EBAE code. It was compared to EBAE only.
Pete Osborne?
Yes, just a couple of comments. Just as I have now seen a 3D printed sheet of Braille was... They took a master sheet and basically reproduced Braille from that. And I think there's some very interesting future prospects concerning Braille preservation, preservation of valuable masters, etc. My comment was on the funding issue. I think the best piece of advice, certainly I would try to give, would be to, if you're looking for funding for something specific, to try and develop a project outline which has a very clear statement of the funding that you require, and there are then options I think that you could look at. For example, the European Blind Union has a specific fund to African Unions, so you might also link through to that. I'm on the Development Commission for the European Blind Union. I'm more than happy to help with project proposals, and I'm obviously aware of a range of other funding opportunities for projects from our sector. But I think the most important aspect is to develop a robust project plan that's very clearly costed so that it's clear what you need the funding for.
Any further questions for the United States? Betty Noble?
Hi. I was just realizing that we don't really know the answer to Bill Poole's question about the research that Sarah Morley is doing, other than the fact that I think she participated in the review of the tactile guidelines that were jointly developed by BANA and the Canadian Braille Authority. So I was wondering if anyone else from the UK has any more information about that particular research and what the purpose of that research is and that kind of thing.
Pete, can you answer?
Yes, I can. It's Pete again. Dr. Sarah Morley-Wilkins isn't doing any specific research as such on this. She has taken part in the review process and has reported to me that the are extremely good and actually are quite close to conventions that we use in the UK. Hence my earlier observation that I do believe that with some further consideration, these guidelines would be something that could really be established as a potential global set of guidelines.
Any further questions for the United States? No? All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. We've got, we have an Australian question. All right.
Madam Chair, it's not a question for the United States, but it is a question for you. And that is, this afternoon we've heard some very informative and interesting reports, and we will continue to do so, I'm sure, as the week goes on. Will these reports all be available on the ICEB website for download?
They've all been pre-circulated, and they are. And you may not have.
I'm
seen
not thinking
the
of. For those of us that are here, I'm thinking.
Oh, I see.
For those who are not here, but may like to read the reports, or for us to refer on when we get back.
It is the discussions that I've had with Judy Dixon are that the minutes when they're put together. We'll have all the reports as an attachment. Am I right, Judy? Is that your intention? Yeah. So there you go. When Judy's minutes are out, the reports will be annexed to those minutes. So all the Bill Poole?
Bill Poole, you're okay. I'm glad you had that question because it gave me time to find mine. I had it written down, but I couldn't remember it. The question I wanted to ask is, did you say that the third part of the evolution of Braille is now available in soft copy? I've got the first two, in hard copy, sorry. I've got the first two parts, and I've deferred reading them till the third became available. And if it's possible to get one quickly, I'd welcome that, a paper copy.
Francis? Yes.
Sorry.
Francis Mary, I beg
your pardon. Yes. It is available in hard copy. Three-part article is also available. Unfortunately, none of us actually happened to bring one with us. I'm very sorry, but I could.
Where are you going to get one? It's all right.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Pete.
All right. Last calls for comments about country reports. Thank you very much, everyone. Now, I've got a few announcements before we close for the end of the day, but I'll be as quick as I can. For various and good solid reasons, we were late starting this morning, about 15 minutes late. That one. But I'm sorry, there's just no room for movement on day two. Tomorrow morning, we will have as a guest the Deputy Minister for Arts and Culture, who is coming at approximately 9. Security reasons, we have to be in the marquee, the 10x8, we will be required to run the same rules that some of us are familiar with concerts around the world. If you're not there by the time the baton goes up, you'll be locked out. So please, can we all try to be here 8:30, absolutely sharp? Also, we will not be able to leave until the minister has left. So 8:30 sharp, and we're staying here until the minister has left, please. Nominations, in addition to those on the slate, are to be in the hands of Fred Schroeder by 5 p.m. today. And Fred, Fred, do you particularly want to comment about this?
I just wanted people to know I'm sitting with the U.S. delegation, and I will remain here until 5 p.m. to receive any additional nominations.
Right, so Fred's going to stay here until 5 o'clock. Now, Pete, as chair of the Resolutions Committee, do you want to make any comments? Okay, Pete.
Yes, I do. So I just wanted to make a couple of observations on how we might form resolutions and obviously take any questions that you might have about that process. One of the advantages of having a member from each delegation on the Resolutions Committee is that you should be sitting in relative close proximity to a member of the Resolutions Committee. And my encouragement would be that you discuss amongst yourselves resolutions that you wish to put forward. What we will try to do is make sure that members of the Resolutions Committee are obviously up to date on the resolutions that are being discussed and developed, so that people in their delegations can also have discussions about those in process, as it were. So we'll begin that process, and for members of the Resolution Committee, I'd like to have our first meeting this evening, if possible, please, at 6:30. 6:30 in the bar. Those people that know me very well, you probably all wish you'd joined the Resolutions Committee now. So we'll meet at 6:30 in the bar. We will meet each day until the resolutions are done. My intention is to get the resolutions done as quickly as we can, and certainly so that they're ready for everybody to peruse on Thursday morning, if not before. Does anybody have any questions about the process?
Not a question, just a bit of information. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mary. We have now an embossing unit set up in room 110, so the resolutions can be forwarded there at any time and then printed and quickly be ready.
Thank you very much, Christo. That's terrific. Thank you. Now, I'm very sorry to report that the menu has not yet arrived. And unfortunately, we're not going to be able to hold the meeting for the menu. I have one...
Fred can tell us.
Sorry? Fred can tell us what the menu is. Hang on. The menu has just come and walked in the door. Ah, well achieved. Well achieved. Okay. So we'll take... Just before we take the menu, I have one last request. Kathy Donaldson... John and I would like to see you at the end of the meeting, please. Right, menu for dinner tonight. Yes, someone has a microphone open. Could you switch? I think is it Jean's table? If you could switch it off, please.
All right, it's two menus. The one is rice, chicken a la king, vegetable pasta with spinach, lamb chops, roast potatoes, gravy and onions, pork belly, and a selection of salads. The second one has only got the puddings on it. It's malva custard pudding, and that's the menu.
Thank you very much. This is extremely helpful for everyone involved. Thank you very much for reading that. I'll just take one last call before I close the first day of the General Assembly. Is there any last-minute announcement that people have to give? No? Right. Thank you, everyone. We'll see us all 8:30 sharp tomorrow morning. Thanks very much.
Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. Have yourself a good day or good evening. to remind everybody that you can follow us on Twitter, ICEB2012. It's ICEB2012, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Also, for any requests, if you have any problems, you want to send us an email about it. If a tweet is a bit too short, the email address is admin@ICEB2012.net or live during the broadcast, live@ICEB2012.net. From myself, Hanif Kruger, have yourself a wonderful day or evening further. Cheers.